It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A global songwriting challenge called Album Writers Month. It's underway with a goal to write 14 songs. We explore the craft of songwriting with a pair of Wisconsin musicians. And you can ask a question along the way, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Katie Dahl is here, folk singer, songwriter, and playwright in Door County. Her fifth album is called Seven Stones, and her musical, The Fisherman's Daughters, will be staged by Northern Sky Theater at Peninsula State Park. Katie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Beth Kelly is here, singer, songwriter, and songwriting instructor in Madison, performing with her own band and others. New book out. It's called Embrace Your Authentic Songwriter. Beth, welcome.
Hello.
Hi. So, okay, here's where we're going to start. This week at the Grammys, singer, songwriter Tracy Chapman performing her 1988 hit Fast Car with country artist Luke Combs. Let's hear that final chorus that brought a standing ovation.
I remember when we were driving in your car, speed so fast it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before, pumping lights down around my shore, and I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone.
Okay, Katie, you first. You've had some feels here. How did this moment, what did you think in this moment?
I mean, I couldn't think. I was overcome by feelings, but I've since thought about it. And I'm amazed by the power of that song. What I felt was grateful to be in a world where there are songs and proud to be a songwriter, because the power of Tracy Chapman leading, propelling the whole song with that amazing guitar riff that we all know. And the song, which is so not like a pop song, like there are no rhymes. There are almost no rhymes in the whole song. You don't get the chorus until like 2 minutes into the song. It's a song about poverty, you know, and trying to make it. So there's a lot that is not typical of a song that really gets a lot of credit in American music mainstream culture. And I was just so overcome by feeling like, wow, songs, they're amazing.
Beth, what came up for you?
You know, that's so funny, because I think, I don't know if I was on your Facebook feed, Katie, but I saw someone post something on Facebook that they were just in tears after seeing that. And I had the exact same reaction. I actually watched it the next day on YouTube because I heard about it. And I was making dinner and I was listening to it in my headphones and I had to stop. I was weeping because it was just so beautiful. And I thought, what a amazing testimonial to the power of music and the power of songwriting, that two people from different backgrounds of different generations can come together in this musical moment and touch so many. It was just so powerful. And I've always loved that song. And I actually just learned it to play guitar behind another singer recently. And I guess it struck me even more when I studied the song, just how simple it is, but yet how powerful it is at the same time.
Simple and powerful. And Beth, you know, here we are in Album Writing Month, and you are now in on this challenge to write the 14 songs before February is out. How does this challenge like spark creativity or maybe make you feel like having a pit in your stomach?
You know, it's funny. I actually feel my most vibrant and healthy when I am creating. And so it might sound stressful from the outside to try to write 14 songs in 28 days. But to me, as the end of January is approaching, I'm like, is it February yet? Is it February yet? Is it February yet? Because I just want to write and I want to unleash all this creative power. And I always have ideas coming to me, but I don't always take the time to sit down and complete those ideas and put them into a finished product. And I guess what's beautiful about February Album Writing Month is it's a website. If you go to FOM.org, there's people all over the world participating. So this morning I woke up and I wrote a lyric. I posted it and I said, hey, does anybody want to write music to this. Go for it. So I've collaborated with people I've never met. I actually co-wrote a song with someone from California that has, you know, really touched my heart. It's such a beautiful experience. So I love this month.
Katie, how are you at writing songs under the pressure of a deadline?
I mean, that's the only way I do it. I mean, I'll write like one or two songs when I'm not under a deadline. And then, but that's, you know, I've written, you know, I don't know, 60 or 70 songs in my life and almost, well, I guess 80 or 90, anyway, all of them under deadlines. And actually, I'm not doing this album writing month challenge, but I am writing a musical that I have a self-imposed deadline of March 6th for. So I feel the exhilaration and the necessary terror that comes from a deadline.
We're talking about songwriting with Door County folk singer Katie Dahl and Madison band leader and songwriting instructor Beth Killey. You can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. So, Beth, you know, you've coached aspiring songwriters for years, and now you've got a book, Embrace Your Authentic Songwriter. Like, what facets of songwriting do musicians need help with? Because I understand the working title of this book was about songwriter self-help.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was lovely, actually. So as the music director for Girls and Ladies Rock Camp, I've been teaching songwriters or aspiring songwriters, you know, people who maybe know nothing at all, have never written a song before. Like, what are the basics of what you need to know? Mm. And, you know, sometimes I think the most basic information, just understanding a little bit about song structure. Like there's repetition to songs, right? Like Tracy Chapman's song that we just heard a snippet of, you know, there's a verse, then there's a chorus, and then there's another verse with the same melody and the same chords, and then the chorus repeats. So it's like, I think sometimes people set out thinking, well, I want to write a song, but I have no idea where to start. And they have all these ideas and they don't know how to corral them. So one of the things that I try to give people up front is, hey, there's a scaffolding, there's structure to songs. And if you just plunk your ideas into this foundation, it makes your life a lot easier and it can help you sort of bring all these ideas together into one 3-minute song.
Like that scaffolding gives comfort. It gives that structure of what you need to kind of do to make it happen. And that's really important to have that structure. But I mean, you've also said that, you know, songwriting, there are no rules. So you can throw
Absolutely.
That scaffolding away.
Yes. And actually, that's one of the things I talk about repetitively in the book is that these are not rules. These are tools. And you should think of all of these ideas as something that when you get stuck in your process, you open up your toolbox, you pull out the tool that you need, you apply it. But there's so many, you know, things that you could apply that if you try to put all of the ideas in that book into one song, you'll drive yourself mad. So it's really just taking out what you need when you need it to get over the hurdle that you've hit in your process. Hmm. And then just letting your creativity flow and not thinking that you have to follow any kind of rules or, you know, there's no magic formula, but there are formulas that can help you.
It makes me wonder, Katie, in the formulas you look at and how you go about with your music. I mean, do you apply it differently when you're writing a musical like you are now versus when you're working on an album?
Totally. I mean, I think the thing about songs and musicals is usually they need to get you to a different place than you were in the beginning of the song. So a song in a musical tends to be less resolved because a song on its own, like a song that I write on an album, should exist, should be able to work in its own little 4-minute form, right? Like you should be able to listen to that song and get something from it. And it's great if it can have context, but the context isn't is necessary to it. But in a musical, you really need to move from point A to point B. Everything needs to be sort of about moving the story forward and moving the character forward. And so things like repeated choruses, often a chorus will change from chorus to chorus because we need to show you know, movement. Or often there are bridges are a musical theater writer's best friend because it's a big change in the structure of the song that can, you know, sort of presage a big change in the in the character's life or in the character's thinking.
Like
So,
a mood shift, even. Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. And sometimes even like a bridge at the end, which is something that you would rarely do in a, in a song, in a musical theater song is sometimes just the thing,
Katie Dahl and Beth Kelly, they are singer-songwriters based in Door County and Madison, respectively. Share what's on your mind about songwriting. Call in with the question. You can add your perspective, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As musicians across the world and in Wisconsin write new lyrics and rough out melodies during Album Writing Month, we discuss the craft of songwriting, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Madison-based singer-songwriter, music producer, and songwriting instructor Beth Kelly is here. And Katie Dahl is a folk singer-songwriter and playwright in Door County. Katie, you've written songs rooted in place and specifically the peninsula of Door County, and you're now writing and performing songs that are more personally revealing. And we're going to hear a sample now of When I Was Eight from your album Seven Stones.
Girl who cares what anybody else might say. I only hate myself a few dozen times a day. And then a few dozen more for feeling that way. Get hit by the bullet and the ricochet. It's a game I don't know how not to play. How does anybody learn to say, hey, not today?
I don't want to jump in here, Katie. Let's just keep listening, right? So what are you contemplating and conveying in this song?
This is a song about sort of my lifelong struggles with body image, which I don't think are unique. I think a lot of us have these problems, especially women, but not only. And so this, the first line of that song is, "I've been trying to lose weight since I was eight." And it's a song about seeing a picture. The first time I saw a picture of my body and didn't like what I saw, and I tore it up and threw it away. And it's sort of a contemplation that goes on from there.
How are audiences responding to these songs compared to your other works?
I would say that these songs are really getting a lot of feedback that feels really personal to me. Like people are really, I heard someone say once, the more specific you are, the more universal you are, and that really has borne out for me. Like I think when I've been talking about these really personal struggles, I get people coming up to me and at the merch table and crying and saying, I get that, or I'm going to play that for my daughter, or I really have found like a sense of community and connection with these other people by talking about things that maybe we wouldn't normally talk about as strangers or even as close friends sometimes.
Beth, can we talk candidly about feedback on songwriting and how to apply it? Because, I mean, you have this thing called the Nashville Hammer, and I would hope you could elaborate on feedback.
Yes. Well, first of all, I just want to say, Katie, that song is gorgeous. I do want to hear the rest of it eventually. But yes, feedback is an interesting thing, and my big take home for the readers of my book is that it's all about intention and purpose. Why are you writing this song? And who is it for? And what is your voice? And what do you have to say? And if you've put your heart out there, said what you wanted to say, you're saying it in the way you want to say it, and it makes you feel something, that's all that really matters. And so this Nashville hammer concept was something that I came up with as just kind of a funny term in my own head for the feedback that I would hear people get sometimes when they would seek out advice on how to write their songs from people who were trying to write for the row, meaning music row in Nashville. And, you know, country songs have a certain structure generally. There's, you know, a certain language that a lot of country artists use. It's very straightforward language. It's not really poetic or flowery. It doesn't mean it's not clever, but it's just, it's a specific style of writing. And so people would come to meetings to get critiques on their songs and would get this feedback for their song that was maybe, you know, for their grandmother about how to make the song better. But in the mind of the critiquer, they're like, oh, well, you want to pitch this song to some publisher in Nashville who's going to hand it off to Carrie Underwood to make it the next big hit. And that wasn't the intention of that song at all. Mm-hmm. So I watched songwriters walk away with their tail between their legs, feeling deflated about this thing that they put out there. But the person who was giving them advice had no clue what their intention was. And so I feel like it's important for us as writers and us as people who are supporting writers to understand that purpose.
I think what I took away too is that, you know, when you have a hammer in your hand, not everything around you is a nail.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Well, Beth, let's hear one of your songs. And you identify this as an anthem, All Is One. It's a track from your 2023 Beth Kelly Band album, This Open Road. Let's listen. Okay, so why is thinking of a song in one or more of categories helpful to songwriting?
Well, I personally find it helpful, again, for that sense of purpose, like what is the function of this song in the mm-hmm. world? But also as a writer, sometimes it helps to reflect on your catalog as a whole and think, you know, if I want to diversify my catalog a little bit, is everything I'm writing an anthem, or is everything I'm writing a love song, or is everything I'm writing a breakup song? So, you know, it can help you both in where to go with your next song and how to think about the purpose of your current song.
And you might surprise yourself, right? I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the beauty of it. Sometimes I start out trying to write something for some reason, and then I'll get a little idea or a word or a metaphor will pop into my head, and I'm like, ooh, I'm going to follow that. So it's perfectly, you know, valid to follow the butterflies and the shiny things and be distracted by squirrels.
Katie, what do you think about that in terms of stretching out and trying different forms in your songwriting and in melodies?
I mean, I think it's great. And I think like, that we all songs exist in this sort of currency of music that we, particularly as American listeners, but beyond that too, that we understand. And I think to think about like, where does this fit in the currency? How will this land on people? Like I heard the songwriter Farron, who's a great songwriter, talk once about like, when you put an image in your song, you're inviting a certain spirit of that image into the song. Like if you put a door into your song, you're putting the spirit of the door in the song. And that comes with this whole set of associations that we as listeners know, you know, and that sometimes that spirit is really big and kind of takes over the song and you need to get rid of it. But sometimes it brings with it so much more than just that image. And I think that's the same with genre and form. Like, oh, we kind of know what an anthem is, and it carries a lot of potency that we don't even have to put into that particular song because we know how that feels in our body, you know, as a listener.
And every word has intention, right? I mean, it can evoke something and maybe evoke something differently for you versus someone else who's listening, a fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and it does I'm always surprised to hear people's
interpretations,
people's reflected yeah. interpretations of my songs. Like, huh, that's not what I thought it was about.
We are learning about techniques in songwriting with musicians Katie Dahl in Door County and Beth Killey in Madison. Call in with a question. You can share comments at any point. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the music industry evolves with expanding genres and platforms like TikTok creating that closer connection to artists, we examine the craft of songwriting during Album Writing Month when some musicians take on that challenge to write 14 new songs. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Katie Dahl is a folk singer-songwriter and playwright in Door County, and her fifth album is called Seven Stones. Beth Killey is here, Madison-based singer-songwriter. New book out is called Embrace Your Authentic Songwriter. Beth, you credit the musical tastes of your parents as being influential. And when you were growing up, you listened to music they loved, including Dan Fogelberg. And so at the risk of being a bit emotional here, we're going to hear a snippet of Leader of the Band.
A quiet man of music denied a simpler fate. He tried to be a soldier once, but his music wouldn't wait. He earned his love through discipline, a thundering velvet hand. His gentle means of sculpting souls took me years to understand. The leader of the band is tired and his eyes are growing old.
Oh, Beth, tell us what moves you.
I love that song. It's the very last line of the last verse in that song that every time I hear it, I burst into tears. It's mm-hmm. Papa, I don't think I've said I love you near enough. Mm-hmm. And I think because my parents were such amazing, influential, creative supporters in my life that it evokes so many beautiful emotions for me. I love Dan Fogelberg's voice and his guitar playing. My mom played his records all the time when I was growing up. So that's just a beautiful song.
Oh, I love that. Katie, are there songs in your life that really propel you back to listening as a kid and in childhood?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mom, especially like Mary Chapin Carpenter, who is, you know, sort of like has a reputation as a country star, but is really like a folk songwriter underneath, I think. And we listened to that. We listened to a lot of Alison Krauss growing up. And I also just grew up loving the musicians I heard at Northern Sky Theater, which I'm now associated with, which was kind of like a music theater hybrid, which is cool because I've grown into a weird music theater hybrid myself.
that evolution there. But you know, I think people are changing. We're now, you know, there weren't phones in people's hands during Leader of the Band days. And
right.
Yeah. And so I'm just wondering, like, have our attention spans changed, or how do you handle like brevity in songwriting, Beth?
I really do think our attention spans have changed. I know mine has changed. But, you know, it's funny, even though sometimes I am concerned about that, but that Tracy Chapman song at the beginning of this whole piece of this radio show that we played with Luke Combs, I mean, that's a long song. And as Katie pointed out, the chorus of that song doesn't hit until 2 minutes into the song. So I think that when you tap someone's heartstrings in the right way and you draw them into your story and into that moment, you can capture their attention again.
I also think, too, is that how you think about that every song idea, it can be just a song. I mean, it doesn't have to be poignant, or it doesn't have to be a cure-all.
Yeah.
And you can just give permission to create a song no matter what. And can you speak to that ability just to write a song because it's a song?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, that I just like to have fun with songwriting. I mean, probably my most requested song is a song that I wrote about how much I love lip balm. And so it's the most ridiculous song I've ever written, but it's the one that people, I mean, they're waving their chapstick in the air when I sing that song. And I think it's, you know, I kind of set the song up like it's about addiction. And then when I get to that chorus and I start singing about chapstick, people lose their minds because they're, you know, first of all, they're surprised, but also they're like, I'm addicted to chapstick too. Or they're like, oh, my sister, or my brother. So they know someone, or they themselves. So if people can relate to your song, it doesn't matter if it's the cure-all for everything and, you know, the most emotional, like leader of the band, Dan Fogelberg type song. I mean, you can touch people with humor and levity and all sorts of different emotions. We all feel all of these.
But you get that vibrancy, though, in a live environment where people are waving that chapstick. And I wonder, Katie, I mean, you perform in cafes and restaurants where there are patrons and other things happening than the performer. What do you take away from those environments, and how do you choose songs to play in these environments versus in strictly concert settings?
Yeah, you know, I don't really play those cafes and restaurants anymore. I sort of, because I was finding it hard, I sort of have shifted to really playing only in listening settings. And that is a gift and has really affected the way I write. I write to be listened to, whether it's a funny song about like a lazy Susan and a dumb waiter falling in love, or it's like a serious song about, you know, lifelong body image struggles. But I think what I did learn, you know, when playing in all those cafes and restaurants, which is what I did for the first several years of my career, taught me so much about how to be comfortable on stage, you know, just putting the hours in to feel, to be able to feel like standing in front of the microphone is a home rather than like a scary cliff, is half the 90% of the battle, really, because after that you can be yourself, and hopefully who yourself is likable or at least is engaging.
It's interesting too. I mean, I would imagine then you get over that stage fright right away because, you know, you're with an audience in such an intimate setting. You can see the expression on their faces as you play a song. Does that affect you?
Well, I mean, I would say that is a blessing and a curse that you can see the expression on their faces. I mean, some people's listening faces when they're in a concert are not the same as people's listening faces when they're in a conversation. Like, I don't think they know that I can see them sometimes. So, they're like listening. They're not supposed to be, you know, having anything on their face other than whatever is naturally happening. But you can get in your head. But I you know, I would say that the stage fright, like some of the songs that I have been playing lately that are scarier to play, I would say I have felt really shaky on stage for the first time in years. Like before I play one of those songs that feels vulnerable, I have for the first few times I felt really like scared in this way that I hadn't for years.
Oh, wow. Beth, what do you do when you have those types of emotions as you approach a song and perform it?
Yeah, you know, that vulnerability piece is so huge. And I think I've tried to adopt the philosophy that all audiences are friendly audiences. And I love your comment about people not knowing what their faces look like, because that's so true. And I've had, you know, people I've approached after shows that, you know, were looking at me like with a really strange expression that come up and say, "Oh, that was a great show." And I was like, "Wow," because you were looking at me like I had
like
some
I
strange marks on my right, exactly. But no, I do. It's funny. Usually, I feel very comfortable on stage, but when I'm performing new music, that's when the nerves kick in, and I. It's good to remember that space though, and to feel that fear and to walk through it. And you know, we all have discomfort in our lives, but it's good to know that every song that I play that I'm comfortable with was at one point a song that was new to me. So I feel I can get through it, but it's it can be a little nerve-wracking at times.
It reminds me, one of my favorite songwriters, Jeff Black, he's, forgive him, based in Nashville, but he was in a coffee shop in Marshall, Texas, and he told us, and we were in, you know, listening in this coffee shop, and there is stuff going on. And he said, you know, "I take my glasses off when I perform, so you are all totally blurry to me." And I've always, like, tucked that away, you know, in my in my head. I'm like, oh, wow, he just gave me some really interesting insight into how he does this on the road. And yeah, I don't know. I like that moment. Well, let's talk about collaborating. And Katie, you co-wrote a couple of songs on Seven Stones with piano and accordion player Julie Wolf, who also produced the album. What is your approach to collaborating with other songwriters?
You know, I haven't done a lot of collaboration with other songwriters, and the work I did with Julie on this record was really transformative, because Julie has a really people might know Julie from her work with Indigo Girls or Ani DeFranco. She was on the road with them for a number of years, and what she brings into the room is this amazing sense of delicacy and respect for the song, and she makes the tiniest moves to really shift songs or open them up or take away barriers. And in the songs that ended up being called co-writes on this record, in both cases I wrote them myself and then brought them to Julie for her. For her feedback, and she ended up making changes that were not wholesale, but that were significant enough that they warranted her being credited as a co-writer. And I feel so glad to have someone that I feel safe enough to invite into that world that feels really personal to me. So that was what that collaboration was like.
And Beth, you play in three different bands. How different is that songwriting process for each of them?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I always joke that co-writing is kind of like dating, where you're not going to be compatible with everybody that you know, go on that first date with. And sometimes it's a matter of just finding the people that you click with. And, you know, the songs on the Beth Kelly Band albums are primarily written by me. I bring them to the band adds their pieces, and sometimes we'll tweak a, you know, a chord or a word here or there, but those are largely, you know, my voice, my words. Gin, Chocolate, and Bottle Rockets is my trio. We've co-written many songs together, and that's, you know, just a very beautiful space to be in. I mean, Jen Farley and Sean Del Marks, my bandmates in those bands, I just have so much love and respect for them that we just have to hold each other in the right space, if you will, you know, in that safe, it's okay to be vulnerable, it's okay to put your heart out there kind of environment when we co-create.
Singer-songwriters Beth Kelly of Madison, Katie Dahl of Door County, giving us insights into their musicianship. Be part of the conversation about songwriting. Call in with a question, add thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the craft of songwriting and what it makes a song stand out when on Spotify that's home to more than 100 million tracks. Call in with a question. Share thoughts on songwriting. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. What a pleasure. We have singer-songwriters Katie Dahl in Door County and Beth Killey of Madison. Katie, one of your newer songs is called Sacristy, and the song addressing your coming of age as a queer person while attending an evangelical church.
Back then I thought that we were serpents. I thought we brought the flood. Thought we turned water into blood. I thought we drank a wicked wine. But really you were an apple. Me, I was a dove, eating manna from above. I guess you knew that all the time.
So, Katie, you know, I think of the sacristy as a place in the church you just don't go. You don't venture there.
But, that's right.
But here, you know, you do, you name it. This is the title of the song. What, you know, how can you explain why you go this direction?
Yeah, well, no, I can't. It's a big mystery. You know, I grew up like you said, evangelical. I grew up like Swedish Baptist. And mysteriously, all the imagery in that song became very Catholic. And I have no idea. That is a big old mystery of the song of the muse. Other than that, like, I think the reason is that there's so much potency. You know, I was talking earlier about like what images carry with them. And I think there's a lot of potency in like wine. And, you know, we didn't have wine at the Baptist church. We had grape juice, right? But there's like the wine and the father. And like, we didn't have fathers, we had pastors, but that doesn't sound as beautiful, right? So I didn't intend to do that, but it just sort of happened that it transformed. And I think the sacristy, like, that's a big mystery too. I don't know how I know that word. Like, we didn't have that in our church. But you know, things burrow into your subconscious and then they come out, which is an amazing trick of the artistic process. And it's really a miracle.
I love how you end on that word miracle. That's good. Beth, you know, just say what's on your mind here. What comes up?
Well, you know, the first thing I was thinking of when you were talking about how the song became Catholic, that there are some words that look great on paper, but they don't sound wonderful when they are sung out of your mouth. So that's mm-hmm. something that I try to impress on people in the writing process too, is that, you know, they think they have to be very accurate, or they have to be, you know, I don't know, speaking complete sentences, but it's a song and it's to melody, and the music tells part of the story as well. And so, you know, choosing the word father over pastor, that makes total sense to me as a songwriter, even though it's not, you know, specific to your specific mm-hmm. past, mm-hmm. it makes total sense. And it paints the right picture, and it takes people on this beautiful journey. I totally get why that happened. It's because it happens to me all the time, and I give it permission.
Well, I think, you know, sacristy could be applied to your spider writing exercise, Beth. Like, you put a word and then you branch out from that word.
Yes. I love doing this exercise when we're group writing. I've done like all of these ridiculous, 45 minute random workshops over the years with people where it's like, okay, we've got 30 people in this room. We're going to write a song in 45 minutes. Let's go. So we put some random word in the middle of the page, put a circle around it. And then I just ask people, shout out whatever the first thing that comes to your mind. And I draw around, you know, off from that center circle, a little leg of a spider. And I put the next word they think of. And then we keep putting more legs on that body, just to come up with a bunch of ideas. And what's fun and beautiful about that is, you know, taking this exercise that someone taught me somewhere along the line, is that you get all these metaphors. You know, you take what was your central idea and then you just keep building on it. And sometimes you have ideas that seem disconnected, but they work together.
Does it work? Does this exercise help?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I mean, you know, not every single song it forms this way. And I think I do this in my brain now without writing it on the paper. But when you're trying to, you know, bring a group of people that are writing all on the same page, you literally want to write it on a page that everyone can see, so they can kind of see each other's ideas and where other people's brains are going. So yes, it has worked for group writing exercises for me in the past.
And you work with young people through Girls and Ladies Rock Camp Madison, and you've also worked with kids overcoming abusive behavior that's continued through generations. And as a tribute to them, you wrote End of the Line.
Daddy had a heavy hand, just like his father and his father's old man. And it was all Joey knew, but he knew it was wrong. Joey turned 17, one day daddy raised his fist. Joey blocked up with his arm, said, let me tell you this. I know that's all you know to do, but I'm not like you. This is the end of the line.
Beth, what do you take away from your time spent with young people?
Well, for Girls Rock Camp, these campers routinely blow my mind with what they can do in a week's time. You know, the camp is for 8 to 18-year-olds. They show up, we put an instrument in their hand, we teach them how to play it. They form a band with four people they just met and write a song on an instrument they just learned. And then they show up at a showcase on Saturday and perform it for hundreds of screaming fans. And it's just so brave and so inspiring to see the way that they work together. And I want them to take home the message that this is the way the world can work. Now take what you've learned here and go forth and spread the news, because songwriting is a beautiful metaphor for just collaborative work in general. So I love working with kids. They've taught me so much, and I'm just grateful for them showing up to camp and sharing their gifts.
Katie, what advice do you share with aspiring songwriters?
You know, the advice that helped me the most as a young songwriter was from a songwriter named Michael Smith. He was a Chicago writer, and I heard him say, like, you know, when you're young, you'll want to ask a lot of other people, is this good? Is this okay? Like, you'll really crave affirmation outside yourself. And he said, you know, if you get quiet, you know if it's good or not, you know. And by good, I think he didn't, you know, you'll know if it's right or not. You'll know if it says what you want to say. And I think that is the advice that I'm still living into, that I wish I could have sort of believed more fully earlier, because I think it allows for true self-expression and real creativity from a deep place.
Sometimes you just have to sit with a song for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been such a wonderful conversation. Thank you both for joining us.
Oh, thank you for
having
me.
Thank you for having us.
That is Beth Kelly, Madison-based singer-songwriter, songwriting instructor, performing in several bands, new book out as well, Embrace Your Authentic Songwriter. Katie Dahl as well, independent singer-songwriter, playwright based in Door County. Her fifth album, Seven Stones, came out in 2023. Her musical, The Fisherman's Daughters, will be staged this summer, Peninsula State Park. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.